Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Again, I'm noticing, Collie, that the critter shed has moved. We're on location. Where are we?
We're in Wicklow, isn't it?
It is Wicklow.
Wicklow, yeah.
You better check Google. It's Wicklow.
Yeah, I think I'm in Wicklow. Yeah, we're in Wicklow. We're waiting for my pal, Evan, to arrive. And Evan has just finished a PhD in Trinity College Zoology Department. So she's a good friend of mine, and she is an expert in a certain mysterious creature from Ireland, which we all know, but most of us don't know much about, and it's the badger.
I didn't know you were into mammals.
Yeah, I occasionally do mammals.
Just to keep it real, keep it varied.
No, I mean, like, we're going to broaden our horizons a little bit. I think badgers fit nicely into our remit because they're nocturnal, and they do like to keep themselves, and I think they have a bad reputation that's probably undeserved.
I think so too. I think they need some love.
Yeah, exactly. And who better to give it to?
What have you got there, Collie?
Big log.
Big log. With some. And what's in your hands?
Welcome to the show. It wouldn't be a great shared episode if we didn't say something phallical,
yes,
and inappropriate.
So Evan, tell me who you are and what you do and what we're doing down here.
Alright, so my name is Evan Gochran and I'm a zoologist at Trinity College. I did my degree there, and I also last year finished a PhD where I was working on a population of badgers in County Wicklow, and we were looking to see if these major roadworks going through their area would disturb them. Thankfully, doesn't seem to have had too much of an impact, which is great news, but there's lots of other really cool things that we've found out about them in the meantime, and it's been a great project, bringing me to lovely places like this. And
we've just come upon an area of bluebells and buttercups. It's stunning, and the edge of this gorgeous old woodland. What do you know about this woodland?
Well, I don't know a huge amount about the woodland, except to say that it is a little patch of deciduous woodland, which is rare enough these days. But it's a gorgeous little pocket of native and some non-native trees in here as well. But the ground is absolutely covered in creeping buttercup and bluebells. So we've got lovely bright flashes of yellow and purple among the green understory. Birds singing in the trees. You can hear the bluebells. Or bluebells. Bluebirds. Bluebirds.
Bluebirds.
Blue tits. Edit that bit out.
Oops. Yeah. Sorry, that was your foot that I stood on. Sorry about that.
We can hear the blue tits and the cold tits calling away there.
And a wren.
And there's lots of logs. So don't expect me to be talking much in this episode. I'm just going to be flipping logs and having a look for
it. Did you find it nice under that one?
I've already found stuff. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I just wood lice and some nice slugs and stuff.
First evidence of badgers we can see here.
Oh, cool.
So can you see anything that jumps out at you?
Okay, so I'm seeing grasses, the flowers and nettles and logs, fallen trees, lots of ivy, beautiful deciduous trees. And I'm seeing there's an area to our left that has a mound, and the top of the mound is sort of bare. It's just earth. And I'm wondering if that might be something.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
What about this thing here? Is
that
a path?
There's like a track or something that is not overgrown.
So there's a very defined track through the undergrowth that sort of meandering from left to right here. And you're right, over there to the left, there is a mound of soil. And what that actually is a spoil heap at the entrance to a badger set.
Okay.
So we'll go over and have a look at it.
Yeah.
Okay. Are badgers protected?
Yes, they are. They're a protected species. And what that means is that we're not allowed to interfere with them, but also with their resting places. So with their sets. So if you see a set and you see a big spoil heap, it's illegal to block it. It's illegal to remove the spoil heap. And it's obviously illegal to harm the badgers in any way as well. So, yeah, very much a protected species.
So we're just walking up to this soil heap. And yes, there's a hole.
Now, this is a badger set, entrance to a badger set. It's quite a large hole. Wouldn't be confused with anything like a rabbit, potentially maybe a fox. But generally, the shape of a badger hole is like a, it's like a capital D that's been tipped over and is lying on its flat side. It's a good shape to look for. So that basically means it's usually more oval on top and more flat on the bottom. And what you'll notice is when you look down into it, it's quite steep.
Mm.
Descends into the ground quite quickly. Now, this doesn't look like a particularly active hole because there's a lot of leaves and sticks and debris here. It's definitely being used, but it doesn't look like it's the main entrance into the set. And you can see, if you follow the spoil heap away from the set, you can see that there's a trail very leading very obviously into the field.
Mm.
And another trail that's leading down there, off in the other direction as well.
So even would this mean that this is an exit?
I know this area, and this is not the main set.
Right.
It might be an outlier set that's not connected to the main set.
Okay, right. Like a halfway house.
Halfway house, like a little B&B.
Cool.
Or it could be just a far-flung exit, and it is connected by the main set. The main set is probably over there by maybe, I think about, I'm very bad at distances, maybe 50 metres,
right.
50 metres away. So what we'll do is we'll wander over in that direction, and you can see what a beautiful big main set looks like.
Brilliant.
Fantastic.
Cool.
It's so beautiful here, isn't it?
I've seen some solitary bees around here as well. So they're probably using this, this earth that the badgers have dug up as their little brooding chambers, which is mad because that means the badgers are providing habitat for other native species. It's crazy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Badgers do like to eat bees as well.
Ground nesting
bumblebees.
Oh.
So, sometimes you'll see evidence of a nest been dug up and pillaged by badgers.
Pillaged by pirate badgers. Yarr!
They'll eat pretty much anything though, badgers.
Right.
So they're kind of known for eating earthworms, but that is a simplification. They'll eat beetles, they'll eat larvae of moths and beetles, and they'll eat berries, and they'll eat wheat, and they love maize.
Wow.
So they'll eat a shed load of stuff, whatever is in season.
So true omnivores.
There's a lot of things to get over and go under here. There's a beautiful long branch of a fallen tree in front of us. I'm just going to dip under it. Yep.
Now.
This is our main set.
Wow.
Oh my God, we're in front of a huge bare mound. Like it's 10 metres?
Yeah, it's like a bomb went off, isn't it? It really is. It's like a crater.
It is, actually.
It's like 1, 2, 3, 4 craters, really.
Oh yeah, they're surrounded by them.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And there's another one over there, about 20 metres away,
yeah.
I would say, in the distance. You can see the spoil heap, and you can actually see a path leading from this one in front of us over to that one again. And this is an old entrance.
So that's covered over in sticks. It's
covered
straight
over.
Down in the ground in front
of
us.
Yeah, it may have collapsed maybe, and they just don't use it anymore, and they've dug up a new one. But let's go and have a look at some of the features of the spoil heap, because when you know what to look for, there's some really cool ways, and I'm looking at it right now and I'm really excited. I haven't been here in ages and I'm so happy.
We're standing on the mound. It's like a crater down into the set. There's a hole in front of us, and so what are we looking at?
So there's a massive big spoil heap around us. How wide would you say that is?
10 metres
wide, in a kind of a semicircle around us. We're looking down into a big hole in the ground. In that big spoil heap, we can see there's a little depression. It's like a little slide almost, That's the main track up out of the set and back down into the set. But can you notice any marks on the soil here?
Yeah, I can see, scratch marks.
Yeah, claw marks right claw down marks. There, yeah.
You can see where they don't only just go up that one. They're coming up all sides, and you can see their claw marks as they're scrabbling up and in and out of the set at night.
It's like Wolverine had a visit here. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
So this is a beautiful example of an active set. You've got no debris in the entrance at all. So it's completely clear of leaves and sticks and that sort of thing. You've got those scrape marks. Mm. And of course, now is the perfect time for cubs to be making their first forays out.
Wow.
Yeah, so you'd probably get cubs coming out here at night with Mammy exploring around for
That's
the first few
so
times.
Cool. You can really see the difference between this active set and the one we saw earlier on.
Yeah. That one, I'd say, is like just an occasional.
Yeah.
Maybe if you've had a fight with somebody and you just don't want to use the front door, you go out the back door or something like that.
Very
I don't know.
Cool.
So underneath us here is a whole system.
My God, there's a badger.
Say that again.
There's a badger actually sticking its nose out.
Really?
Straight up. I nearly had to die in there.
What?
Yep, just a snout. He took one look and then and bolted back in. But
you
this
be
did.
Asleep?
Well.
Are you serious?
Yeah, 100%.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh.
That is crazy.
Don't worry, badger. We mean you no harm. Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Look at your face.
How mental that was.
Oh, wow. Well, that's quite unusual because they're nocturnal.
I didn't expect to see that today.
You know? I mean, the reason we came here during the day is because they should be asleep underground and we wouldn't disturb them by being here. And also you can see all the features beautifully. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Should be tucked up in bed now.
I know. Maybe we made too much noise and woke them up.
Dear.
That was magic. That was really magic, yeah.
We're staring here at the hole waiting for him to come back again and it's just not going to happen.
I think we're just in shock. I mean, the only badgers I unfortunately see are dead ones.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
And before I started my PhD, the only badger I'd seen was a dead one as well, you know. So I was really lucky to do this project because we obviously had to under a license trap and the badgers to put collars on them, and so the vet from the Department of Agriculture would knock them out before we were able to touch them, but then we were able to put the collars on them, give them health checks, vaccinate them against TB, give them the BCG vaccine, treat them for any wounds, that sort of thing. So real up close and personal stuff, and it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm mad jealous you saw that.
I know, yeah. 2 seconds, but
wow.
Yeah, just a little eye went fuck him and ran back in.
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah,
that's you mad. Can see that classic D shape there.
Yeah.
Now that we're looking at it.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people would have misconceptions about badgers.
Yeah.
So, if you'd like to set the record straight, that'd be brilliant because that's what we're all about here.
Okay.
It's just.
Well, I suppose one of the most common things that people say to me about badgers is, "Oh yeah, they're really vicious," and they'll attack you and bite down on your foot and they won't let go until they hear a bone break. And that's why farmers always go out with sticks in their wellies. Now, that's the biggest load of shite ever. It's just simply not true. Badgers are incredibly equipped to defend themselves and they do fight among themselves. But they're not a naturally aggressive species.
Yeah.
So in our experience, when we were trapping the badgers, what we would do is we'd set a cage out, bait it with peanuts. The badgers would go in at night and we'd come in very early the next morning to process them. And we'd do it as quickly as we could because we didn't want to stress them out. Invariably, they would be in the cage either pretending to be asleep or playing dead. They'd have their little paws over their eyes, like sometimes you see cats doing. And it's kind of like their kids saying, if I can't see you, you're not there, kind of thing. If I can't see you, you can't see me. And what we would do is we would microchip our badgers, a bit like you do with your cats and your dogs, so that we would be able to identify them. And we would scan them then with a sheep scanner, which is basically just one of those scanners your vet has, but on a long stick. So we'd have to open the cage and put the scanner in. And that was always quite risky because you could lose the badger. He could bolt at that point. And you also weren't sure. You're dealing with a wild animal that has an absolutely amazingly beautiful set of teeth with massively strong jaws if they were going to go for you. And what they would do, they would never bite. They would actually, if anything, would make a kind of a mock head rush and kind of a hiss at you to scare you. Biting was never their first instinct at all. And in fact, out of the hundreds of occasions where we trapped badgers over the 7 years that we were working, there was only two cases where a badger actually bit the stick. And one of them was with me. It was a cub, like a young individual, and he basically just mouthed the stick to check it out and see what it was. So it wasn't an aggressive interaction. They'll defend themselves. They'll use shock tactics first, and then they want to run. But unfortunately, they get a bad rep, probably due to things like badger baiting and badger digging, where arseholes basically like to come along and dig them out of their sets with their dogs and either kill them in situ or bring them elsewhere and pit them against dogs and fight. And they are amazing fighters and they'll defend themselves very well, but that's where that fearsome reputation is coming from. And that's not fighting, it's defence.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really not warranted. They're gorgeous animals, and speaking from experience, they have different personalities. You know that different badgers are going to react in different ways when you come upon them in the cage, and they're great. So it's truly undeserved reputation that they have. They're fabulous.
All that crap generally gets generated because we look at everything through our human eyes and our human experiences, and we match a certain behaviour against our own behaviour. And you know, badgers are not getting up every morning thinking, yes, I have to bite someone. It's all about just getting on with your life and being able to survive.
I mean, they are omnivores, but they are a part of the mustelid group, which are carnivores. So they come equipped with these beautiful long teeth and very strong bites, and they certainly use them in terms of defence between different social groups and that sort of thing. But it's not they're not hunters, they're not predators in that sense of the word. So they're great.
They have very complex social lives. It's like a little soap opera.
Yeah. So badgers live in social groups, and that basically means that here where we are now in this set system, there's one family lives here, and there'll be generally, the literature likes to say there's a dominant male and a female, so a breeding pair, but actually what we found is that you can have more than one female breeding in the same social group, but you'll generally have a breeding pair and then their offspring, and they'll be like yearlings and slightly older adults, and then the cubs. And generally your social group, it can be anything from like 3 or 4 badgers, maybe up to 6, 7, 8, even higher in the UK. And they live in a territory that they defend, and either they defend that through fighting, as I've mentioned, but mainly it's defended by, you see these system of paths that we can see, they're really well worn. And what badgers do is that they mark the paths at latrines along the way. So they poop into it basically, and they have secretions from their anal glands, and that contains a wealth of information about who they are, male, female, age, sexual status, whether they're like receptive or not. So there's a whole system going on of little information posts, and that's how they generally maintain their social structure. But we found actually that, like I said, you have more than one breeding female. We found that when you do the genetic analysis on the badgers, that actually a lot of the cubs, maybe more than half the cubs, are fathered by individuals from maybe the group next door.
Ooh, saucy.
Yeah.
So it is like EastEnders. This is Albert Square, and we have Phil Mitchell in here.
So particularly, and they're very romantic as well, because particularly around February, we used to be able to track where they were going, right? And normally they tend to stay within their group. They go for visits here and there. But in February, when the females have given birth, they come back into season. The yearlings, the female yearlings for the first time are in season, and everyone's like, woohoo! And they basically, you could see the males in particular paying visits to the other main sets of other social groups. And there was one fella, Rory, who went and visited 5 other main sets in the month of February.
Fair play, Rory.
Yeah, Rory is.
what's he eating? And where can I forage for it?
So,
wow.
Yeah, so there's a much more relatedness between the social groups than people had kind of realised. And there's also all these sneaky matings going on the whole time that people weren't like. So, and the cool thing about badgers is a really deadly reproductive system whereby the peak in their mating season is around about February, but actually they can mate.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the kids say.
They meet to mate.
So they can mate at any time throughout the year until December, when it's kind of a shortening of the day signal for the females to kind of bed down and get pregnant, or, you know, continue the pregnancy, because they do this really cool thing called delayed implantation. So it means that when they mate and an egg gets fertilised, when it becomes a blastocyst, it basically goes into suspended animation. So it just sits there without implanting. And she can actually be mated several times over the year, and there could be different males mating her. And she can store those blastocysts and wait until December and implant them all at the same time. So she can have cubs belonging to a variety of different males.
Wow, in the same litter?
In the same litter.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. That's a really cool trick.
Yeah. So
if there's huge diversity then, genetic diversity, so they're...
The genetic diversity thing is kind of weird, actually. It's not as diverse as you would think, but I think that's because everybody is mating with everybody else.
Okay.
So there's just like massive mixing going on.
Yeah.
Scandalous stuff going on here. We should cue the EastEnders. Doom, 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 doom. Who's the father, Rory?
We had one badger called Berry. She made a booty call over to a set of a young male called Romeo. And it was a 9 kilometre round trip.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so we could see...
Romeo was well named.
He absolutely was. We could see her, she came out, and then a couple hours later, we got a ping off her over at that set, and then a couple hours later, we got a ping off her back home again. So she went and got her hole and came back again.
This is amazing. This is amazing.
Do you use that exact language in your scientific papers?
Oh, yeah, it's a scientific title.
Get your hole.
You're a better...
Myself and Evan come from the same disciplined scientific literature background.
Precise language. Yeah. No ambiguity at all.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is amazing, Spike.
Isn't it gorgeous?
It's stunning. I've never been at a place like this before.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it harkens back to what most of this country used to be like.
This is what a badger set should look like. But because we don't have a lot of woodland left in the country, and what woodland we do have tends to be like coniferous monoculture, you generally find that in Ireland anyway, hedgerows are where your sets are located. So to find a big set like this with massive spoil heaps and like numerous different entrances among the trees, it's quite special and it's quite rare. It's a beautiful spot.
It's stunning. Like it's magical. You know, you have that feeling that you just don't get when you're up in the spruces and grassland. You know?
But you look at everything that's growing around us. It's just a blanket of flowers and all the birds. And you hear the chiff-chaff.
It's hard to explain to people as well. You find it hard to explain because a lot of people will walk up in pine forests and spruces and say, oh, this is wonderful, I'm out with nature. But it's like, if you could get them to walk in a forest that's an actual native forest or even semi-native and deciduous and you just see the variation in life compared to like just pine cones and pine needles on the ground. It's...
But where we're standing now,
top
like
cheese, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And where we're standing now, like there's plenty of light coming in. There's lots of things growing. But when you go up to those pine forests, it seems very dark. Oh, so, is there much growing in there at all?
No, there isn't. And also, the pine needles when they fall, they change the composition of the soil in underneath. So you only get like nettles, and you don't get very much things growing at all down there.
Toxic, dear. It's really a monoculture, really is, which is useless, really. We have a wander further in.
Yeah, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
that bird song.
Badgers are actually very clean, so they bring bedding into their sets to make nice beds for themselves, like grasses and things, and they'll roll it up in a big ball, and they do this funny kind of backwards bunny hop where they drag it backwards into the set, but then they also take that bedding out and clean it, because they are breeding grounds for parasites and things like that, so they're very conscientious about keeping their sets clean. Here's a foraging sign, so you can see that there's a little hole that's been sort of rooted out here. And that's very typical in size and shape of a badger that's been snuffling for food. So they're very much into using their noses to kind of dig out and find their prey. And often when you see them in pasture, you can tell the difference between that and a rabbit digging, for example, because A, rabbit ones are usually full of rabbit poo, but B, the shape is different, slightly bigger, and oftentimes the sod seems to be like flipped over. And that's a very typical badger foraging sign.
What's badger poo look like?
Well, hopefully we'll try and find some, because I love badger poo. I get so excited about badger poo. And I actually was told by one of my friends to stop posting pictures of badger poo on Facebook. Otherwise, she was going to post a picture of her daughter's dirty nappy. It's like, okay, fair enough.
Brilliant.
We're following a badger path over to another set entrance.
We're looking for poo.
We're looking for a latrine, because oftentimes there'll be a latrine in the vicinity of the set as well, where they'll come out and... Oh, nice big latrine!
Let's go and have a look at the poo. Yay! Well done, Collie.
Oh, you know
shit
me.
Spotting expert.
Yeah. I'm obviously able to spot a bit of shit.
So this is a really nice example of a latrine where you can see that there's been layers and layers of feces deposited.
Mm-hmm.
So... they'll come out, multiple individuals come out, and there's a little pit that's usually been dug, and they'll basically just layer on poo after poo. So the freshest is going to be at the top, and the older stuff underneath. Now, I'm just looking at this.
Nice flies around there.
It doesn't look particularly fresh. There's another one there that's definitely older beside it. But you can see in this one here, I wish I had my gloves, that there's little evidence, a little bit of beetle.
Oh, right.
You can generally see the elytra, and they'll be little black or blue shiny bits that you see in the feces. And depending on the time of the year as well, you might get wheat and maize quite recognisable in there. That.
And in ecology, it's all about the poo, isn't it? Knowing about what they're up to.
Like, most mammalogists don't actually get to see their study species. They just spend their time chasing around the country. Look, there's a lovely beetle there now, look.
Oh, wow.
They just spend their time looking at poo. Which isn't as gross as it sounds. It's actually quite enjoyable.
Yeah, and people wonder why I don't do mammals that often.
So there you go.
And lots of animals feeding off it again.
Yeah, you can see other insects and inverts are kind of
crazy.
Crawling around it, and they're recycling that now.
And I've just spotted something gorgeous right beside the latrine. Ferns just about to unfurl.
Yes, isn't that lovely? Oh, it strikes me as being really kind of primeval,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, Jurassic Park stuff.
So these are Irish bluebells as well. They're not Spanish bluebells.
Yes. Our native ones, which is, it's rare enough to see them now.
Yeah. Well, the Spanish ones tend to get planted in gardens, and then they'll
hybridize
and break out themselves. But these are the native Irish ones. They kind of all fall to one side, the little heads fall to one side, whereas the Spanish ones, the heads will be all the way around.
Mm. Oh God, the bluebells and the buttercups just keep going on for metres and metres and metres over hill and dale. It's beautiful.
First time I came down here a couple of years ago, I almost wept. It was just that gorgeous.
Yeah.
It was, it really was.
It's like something out of a fairy tale. You know, expect Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs to come around the corner.
Yeah. You just don't expect to see stuff like this anymore, which is, again, it's a shame. But
and we don't see that much of it.
We can get it back.
Yeah, we can get it back.
We can. Now, down this way.
Well, let's not go down there because it's actually a bit wet down there.
Okay.
We could walk through the woods over that way and see what we can find. If we can maybe follow a path, yep. See what we happen upon.
Watch yourself.
Yikes. Lovely.
Tree protocol.
Tree protocol.
Careful of the branches, low-lying branches.
Oh, there's another.
Sorry. There's another entrance over here. So this set is really massive. And actually, if you were to, like, x-ray this set, you'd see that there are multiple entrances and there's multiple tunnels, and underneath there's multiple chambers, so chambers where they sleep, and there, it'll be like almost like a multi-story apartment building. There can be several layers, there can be like three floors, I guess. It can extend for meters and meters and meters and meters. I think the oldest set that's been found in Ireland is down in Cork, and it's 200 years old.
Holy.
Yeah, so badgers are very, very faithful to where they live. And if, for some reason, a set had to be removed, say for, you know, a new road going in or development, you'd have to make sure that they had an alternative. But oftentimes what will happen is they'll try to come back, because that's their gaff. They don't want to move.
No.
Well, you know, if you've got a good ecologist working on the project, you can make sure that there are alternatives.
Yes.
So the project we were working on, for example, we only had to exclude one set, and it turned out that there was a second really big set in their social group that they were happy to use. Now, they have been digging up near the old set because they can't quite get to where it was before, because there's badger proof fencing up there now, so they're opening up again a little bit, but they were happy enough to move to another one.
Okay.
The alternative is to put in artificial sets close by, but they have to be really well placed. They have to be in the type of ground that badgers like to be in. It can't be too wet. It's no point in putting it in a damp place. That's just useless to them.
How are we for badger numbers in this country?
It's hard to know, because we haven't done a national survey of badger numbers for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been several attempts to quantify how many badgers we have based on trapping records and that sort of thing. But no one has actually gone out and done a census for quite a long time. And I think, and I'm going to get this wrong, and I really shouldn't get it wrong, but I'm going to say that the last estimate was around 84,000, I think. Don't hold me to that.
Oh, yeah, I
agree. But the issue is, there's a couple of issues. No systematic monitoring of badger numbers. Also, they're very hard to study because they're nocturnal and they live underground and occasionally stick their heads out of holes and look at you. You lucky bastard.
He's gorgeous.
So no systematic monitoring. And also then, how do you count them? So it's very hard to... They all look alike.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So it's hard, you know, if you're doing a set emergence count to... And you've got so many entrances, to get them all and to know who's who, to know which individual is which.
Mm-hmm.
So what some people have done is counted the number of holds, estimated the size of the set, then estimated the size of the social group that's there, and then multiplied it up. So it's all a bit wishy-washy. And then there's also another issue, which is that we have been culling badgers here in this country for the last few decades,
mm-hmm.
as part of the TB control strategy. So there's been that pressure on them as well. And then so many badgers get taken out on the roads. So it's hard to know how many there are. It's hard to now know how well the population are doing. What I would say, though, is that they're hardy as fuck, though. They're really hardy animals, and
moving into urban areas as well.
Moving into urban areas, or just staying where they always were as we expand.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah, yeah, I got you. Yeah, I see what you mean.
So I mean, we have good, really, as you know, we've got really good badger populations in Dublin.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So
as long as people don't find them.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Do you have a sense of how many will be in this set under our feet?
Yeah. So probably here we would have a good, I'd say, 6 badgers. We always were able to put collars on about 2 to 3 individuals in this group. But we always know that there's more, because we'd either get them on camera, or there was the mystery female here for years that we didn't know who was having all the cubs. We'd no idea. We couldn't trap her, but we had babies all over the gaff. We had the males, we had the youngsters, no sign of the breeding female, didn't know who she was at all. And it turned out we caught her one year, and it turned out that she'd been here all the time. She had been caught years ago when the project first started and I wasn't even working on it. And then she rocked up like 6 years later. So she'd been here all the time, just undetectable by us, because she's what we call a cage shy badger. She didn't like going into the cage, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
So,
smart lady.
So there'll always be ones that you don't get. But I reckon in this social group, there's probably, like between the generations, a good 5 or 6, I would say.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That is so cool.
Do you remember I was saying to you that they live in social groups and they have their territories? And we found that there was a few males that were just not playing by the rules at all. They weren't confining themselves to their own social groups.
and it looked like their territories were two or three times the size of anyone else's. And we put collars on them and analysed them, and they were basically, they had basically just expanded out and taken over the social group next door as well. And it was just them that was doing it. Like, it wasn't like their whole group suddenly took over the next door. It was just them managing the two social groups, basically. Two or three. And sometimes they do this for 2 or 3 years. Massive territories. Massive borders to patrol. Lots of ladies to mate with. Just, like, hugely energetic lifestyle. And
I love these guys. Yeah, they're having quite the time.
Yeah. Your spirit animal, Colin. Yeah.
But they were, you know, you could see it on them when you caught them. They were like, you know, they'd bits of ears missing and...
Yeah, been through the wars.
Yeah, yeah. Bites in their arse and their cheeks from where they'd been in the wars with other badgers. So big territories to defend. Wow. But one of them was a fella called Michael, and he was from here.
Cool.
And he was ranging over three different... groups in this area.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
What, Alan Michael?
Even, do you have any favourites or any particular personalities that you've become fond of?
Yes. I know you're not supposed to become attached to your research subjects, but oh no, God, always. I had Muffin. Oh, Muffin broke my heart. Collie, what are you doing? He's got a bag full of moss.
I have 50 frogs that I have to put into containers, and this is beautiful, fresh sphagnum moss. Where better to get it from than the beautiful hills of Wicklow?
Sorry, I was saying Muffin. Muffin was a gorgeous little thing that we caught when she was a cub, and we'd name all our badgers. And when I came along, it sort of took a very confectionery turn. So we had Muffin and Tiffin and... various different cupcake was another one. Anyway, it's hungry work, field work. So Muffin, she was just a beautiful little thing, and she started to disperse away from her natal set. Sometimes badgers will do that, basically. They just leave home and move to a new place. And she was making these big long journeys. She'd 10 kilometres down south, and then she'd come 10 kilometres back up, and she'd go up and down and up and down. And it was amazing to see how far she could travel, you know. It was really cool. And then we lost her. And it turned out that she got caught in a fox snare. Yeah. Devastated is not the word. Like, devastated. So...
I remember you were broke up over that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it wouldn't have been a nice death either.
No,
you know?
No, not at all.
It would have been a few days.
Yeah.
So that
snares
was...
ain't pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty horrific. And to lose her was... Yeah, that was a big blow. There was another fella, Billy... He had a massive territory that was about 7 kilometre square at one point, which is about three times the size of average, more actually. And he was a big old bruiser, and he literally expanded his range in a couple of, over the space of a few weeks and months, it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. He maintained this massive territory for 2 years, and then boom, overnight he lost it, and he just contracted back down to his original territory again. He obviously met some other fella who was like, fuck off.
Yeah.
But unfortunately we lost him to illegal hunting, and we found his collar in a river, and it had been cut off his neck. And I think the people who took him out didn't think we would find the collar in the water, but unfortunately we never found him. So that was really sad. And then I had another one, Baru, who he was just the most perfect badger. He was a big fella, and he was lovely clean head, and he was always really chilled out. And when you let him out of the cage for him to go back into his set, he wouldn't even run. He'd just be like, ah yeah, moseying back in, not a bother on him.
He was
a beautiful animal, and we lost him eventually on the road. A lot of our badgers were taken out by cars.
Must be hard.
Yeah,
really hard, especially with like hunting and snares. Cars, I suppose it's quick,
but yeah, for the most part cars are quick.
Yeah.
So either it happens really quickly and they're the ones you see right beside, or it's a little bit longer and they drag themselves home towards the set. And we lost a lovely little fella called Bert. There was also an Ernie as well, and Bert was only he was a yearling. He wasn't even a yearling, he was a young badger. And we had a collar on him for 3 weeks, and he got hit, but he managed to drag himself up into a patch of gorse and expired up there. But then we had the collar on him, you see, we were able to find him.
How do you cope with that? Because I know, even my own little bugs and frogs.
The first
breaks my heart. You know? So I can only imagine you get more attached to a lovely, fuzzy, endearing little creature like a badger.
And when you were trapping them every day, like, because when we would trap them, some individuals would just go in every day because they love the peanuts so much. So you'd get to really, like, there was one fat Eddie who just every night we caught him because he loved the peanuts and he was fat. And so you would get to know them. So the first time it happened, and the first one that happened for me was Billy, and that really killed me.
Yeah.
Particularly the circumstances of it really killed me. You do get used to losing them after a while.
Yeah.
But then you have your favourites, and Muffin killed me altogether.
Yeah, I got you.
So that was really hard. And then Baru died after the project was finished. And what happened was I was still working on all the data and stuff up in Trinity. And there's a farmer here who rang me and he said, I have a badger on the side of the road. And I said, OK, well, give me his number. And I was looking his number up on the spreadsheet and I just was like, it's Baru, and I started crying.
Oh, no.
And he started crying.
Oh no.
Yeah. So God. Yeah, it was tough. It was tough.
Hard.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
But look, the opportunity to work with them was, you know,
just
incredible.
And come here, on a positive note, it's great to come down to a place like this. I mean, Colette, you've never
seen
this kind of stuff.
Amazing.
You know, and it's great to come down to a place like this and see that they're still here generations later and still doing well. And where they should be, as opposed to stuck away in the corner of a field in a hedgerow somewhere.
Well, they do very well for themselves in hedgerows.
They do. Yeah.
They're really adaptable. They're incredibly adaptable. They're incredibly hardy. They're incredibly robust. So even though we don't really know what their numbers are, I'd be quite optimistic about them.
Yeah.
You know.
Cool.
And they're just great animals. You know, it's amazing to have something that's that big wandering around our countryside that we really don't get to see very often, you know.
So cool.
Yeah. I also think they're really misunderstood. Like a lot of animals that live in the wilderness or whatever wild areas we have, they're completely misunderstood because they have behaviours that we interpret through human eyes. And I think if people actually get to know what they're all about, let's all fall in love with the badger and protect it and help it out. It'd be great.
Thank you for filling us in on them, because it's just fascinating to hear about
it. It's been brilliant to get back down here again. You know, I've missed coming down and it's such a beautiful place and it's been great. And I'm just so jealous you got to see one.
Yeah, I can't believe it. My heart actually nearly jumped out of my head. I thought I was going to faint.
Sure, you were sweating.
I know. Because at the same time, I know what you're saying. But it's like when I hand you a scorpion, you're probably there going,
absolutely.
I know they're not going to do anything. But when I saw the head come out, I'm like, please don't bite me. It's like, but it literally,
you know, it didn't even make a sound.
It just had a little look with one of its eyes and then popped back in.
It didn't even growl at us. It didn't chuff at us. It didn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and that just shows you that all they want is peace and quiet.
Yeah.
You know, just want to be left alone. Yeah, that's true.
There you go. Awesome.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks so much for that, Evan. That was really, really special.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Right. Let's make our way back to the car.
To the pub! It is Good Friday after all.
Yeah, it's actually open today for the first time.
I know!
Oh my God, don't tempt me, I have to go to the pub.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.